How to challenger brands make their mark, build customer loyalty, and challenge global players. In this episode, I talked to Samantha Skyring, the founder and CEO of Oryx Desert Salt, a brand that asks its customers to buy less, not more, which is the opposite of what many other brands do. They thrive on sustainability rather than wanting to sell more and more and more. We also talk about why they cut their spend on Meta to be more visible on LinkedIn, where Samantha herself is more active.
We live now with the internet and social media and Facebook. I think it's possibly easier now than it may have been, 15 or 20 years ago, pre-internet. Mm. And for me, my predominant platform has become LinkedIn.
Yes.
And I love it because I even notice with myself, I will actually read a post. Whereas on Instagram, it's almost feeding this instant gratification mindset.
We also discuss what has happened over the past couple of years to help them with their growth in a world that is dominated by global and multinational brands.
And I went to a wellness conference and showcased Oryx there. And 3 months before, I had been at a food conference in New York. And the difference in the response from the consumers that were at these two different places was worlds apart. At the foodie conference, I felt like I was trying to convince people that this was the healthy alternative. And at the wellness conference, everyone already knew that salt was good. It was essential, not only good for you, absolutely essential for optimal health.
Stay tuned for this conversation and please subscribe to The Lead Creative wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to The Lead Creative Podcast, where we talk to creative industry leaders, influencers, and brands. We discuss the strategies that influence brand thinking and shape industries. Thought leaders and heads of agencies let us in on some of their thinking and insights. I'm your host, Monge Zimtati. Enjoy the show. And please share and subscribe.
Samantha, thanks so much for making the time to chat to us on The Lead Creative. I know you've been doing a lot of travel lately, getting the brand out there. I've been following a lot of your work and conversations on LinkedIn in recent times. And where in the world are you today? I think I should first ask.
Well, firstly, thank you so much for the invitation. I really appreciate being able to come share some more. And I'm curious and interested to hear your questions. Currently, I'm on the southern tip of Africa. Hopefully you have some international global community as well, but south of Cape Town. And I'm home for the rest of the year, which is such a blessing.
Yeah. Amazing. You've built Oryx Desert Salt into a recognized brand in a category that a lot of us don't really think much about. What sparked, firstly, your connection to salt, and how did that evolve into a mission-led business and not just another product or brand, as it were?
So I had a friend, colleague, who was selling the salt in bulk overseas, and he didn't want to create a product for South Africa. He thought that the market was too small, and it is small. And I had just come out of 7 years of an NGO, my own NPO called 20,000 Drums, which was a upliftment project in rural communities. And so I was looking for something. And I remember driving past a restaurant in Greenside, and I saw salt and pepper sit on the table. And there was that aha moment. Oh, wow. Here's a product that has such incredible visibility on a restaurant table. And how many products sit on a table? Maybe olive oil and vinegar, maybe some, sweetener or so. And that really sparked the, there's something here. And my first boyfriend also told me many, many years ago that if you can find a product that people use every single day of their lives, then that's a great product to have. And it was like, okay, amazing. I think the difference, obviously, Oryx Desert Salt is a different quality to the salt that we have been offered on shelf for many, many, many years. And because it's offered so sort of prevalently and it's so widely available, in fact, South Africa has almost a full drop of salts, whereas internationally, when you go, there's maybe a one shelf of salt. So we really, for some reason, there are a lot of salt on offer on the supermarket shelves. And so we don't value the product, even though 1,000 years ago, 100 grams of salt would be equivalent to 100 grams of gold. It was paid as salary.
It
really does come from an incredibly special place, which we can talk about a little bit later. And it is not just a commodity. So in a way, it's a mission to bring back the value of salt for our health, because I've contemplated, why is table salt worth so little? Why is it one of the almost the cheapest products on shelf? And in a way, it is because the actual product has been devalued, because it's been so highly processed, it has less value to the body, and therefore the monetary exchange is less. And obviously because it's overproduced, and it's overproduced because it's an industrial salt that is predominantly put on shelf as in table salt. And so, it has these magical spontaneous moments and these gifts.
Yeah.
And we either accept them in the moment and get taken on a journey we never expected. And I guess this is what happened to me with Oryx Desert Salt. I had this gap in my life where I was looking for something.
Then
the salt arrived on my path.
Building a challenger brand, though, in a category that's dominated by global multinational names takes a lot of conviction. I think from that moment, sitting in Greenside, having this realization, and then looking at, to your point, what's on the shelves, and a lot of it is global, a lot of it is multinational brands. What do you believe smaller, values-led brands can do better than the giants? And where do they struggle?
I would say the integrity of the product. So not only what's in the actual product that you're offering, but in the packaging as well. And so instead of putting a label onto our bottle, we print it. And instead of putting a plastic grinder head, we put a grinder head that has a ceramic mechanism which lasts longer and is good for your health because you're not grinding plastic into your food. And it's good for the planet because we're saving 1 million bottles and heads from landfill every year. So it's being able to really look at the values of the business and the values of the brand and making those intrinsic to one another and not cutting corners and ensuring that the product that you are offering, I can sleep well at night knowing that I am offering value, that I haven't cut corners.
Yes.
I would say that that intention, the attention that you give the product and the packaging, I believe can be felt. You know, even I was sharing on Wednesday with my team, I saw another brand and they had a sticker on, and the sticker was skew. And every single one of our stickers is straight. And that's that extra moment of care and love and attention. And that comes through my team and I spending time together. What makes us different? The attention to putting a sticker on straight. And even though people might not notice it's straight, they will notice if it's skew.
Yeah.
And I think that ultimately is the language, in a way, a sort of a subconscious language that people feel and sense.
Something sticking with this, I suppose, this intentionality about this brand intentionality and this intentionality that you approach it with. There's something that I've noticed while preparing for this conversation. There's something I noticed in one of the stores that I frequent, where while looking around on the sort of, spices and sort of condiments aisle, in this particular store, I noticed that Oryx Desert Salt has a smaller shelf, smaller compact shelf space in this particular store. I don't know if that's the case in all others, but I noticed it in this one store that it's compact, it's smaller. Was this part of a broader sustainability strategy and brand building mindset for you to be compact rather than expensive, to be, to your point, intentional? And what can marketers and other brands learn from this restraint?
So unfortunately, that's not my intention, because obviously the more shelf space you have, the more visibility you have.
Right.
So the other brands are still add more value to the supermarket than maybe what we do. And so they'll give the product that is the highest selling product on shelf more space. So what has been very intentional, though, is we try and ensure that our grinder and our refill sit together on shelf.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, the box obviously has more, you know, it pulls your attention more than a grinder. I find grinders get lost on shelf. And then what we've done is, as well as this refill, reuse, real value. And then only recently did I add it to the box so that, because I think we are so information overloaded and overwhelmed that we don't read. I know I even am at fault at not reading things. But this initially, this was about 3 years ago, felt a little bit like those awards that get, you know, placed onto a product.
Yeah.
And now it feels like it's just making it easier. These two, they fit together, reuse, real value. So I think that, and in fact, we're going to be adding a sticker to the lid because this one is part of our tamper seal. So it comes off.
Right.
And I put the barcode onto the tamper seal because you don't need a barcode once you bought the product. And it's ugly.
Right.
So I don't want a product sitting on your dining room table with a barcode on. You know, that's not so sexy.
Yeah.
And so by putting it on the lid, we can, that message, in fact, the one on the lid is going to be refill, not landfill. And we did a poll on LinkedIn to hear what other people's views were on refill, reuse, real value, or refill, not landfill. And that was the one that got the highest, points.
Yeah.
And then at least it will sit on the lid and the message will go further. And in fact, if I was to open this inside, I can open it. There should be. I hope there is. Yes, there is. There's another little message inside because we've really wanted to share the message with our consumers that our grinder head is ceramic. However, I have seen people take that out and throw it away and not read it.
it's ongoing.
But I think, you know, because it's important for me that people get this message because it is healthier for their pocket, their health, and the planet. It's been so important that how do we get this message across? And we've had this grinder now for probably a good 12 years. It's a long time. And yet it feels like this message is only coming across now. And so that attention to detail, again, whereas maybe the corporates don't have that, the longevity of, okay, we've got this product. How does it support? What is the future impact?
Yes.
And because, you know, I have that mindset and the company has that mindset, then what we do is for the longer term and not necessarily for the short term.
I get you. I think that is also something very, I suppose, distinct to a brand that is challenging in the market and adding a different kind of value, attention to detail. And I think this is something that you've kind of emphasized a few times, and I've probably only asked you maybe three questions, but this attention to detail, this love, I suppose, that you transfer from yourself to the team, to the product. And it, to me, it kind of links back to something else that you've spoken about, this idea of story, this idea of storytelling, which can sometimes be hard to transfer from yourself to me, the customer, are buying it off off a shelf. How do you ensure that story remains, that it's shared, I suppose, and that it lives on from your intention to the customer?
I get wonderful opportunities from people like Mongezi Mtati to be on the podcast to tell the story.
And I'm glad we could be part of it. Yeah.
Thank you. So, I mean, you know, we live now with internet and social media and Facebook. I think it's possibly easier now than it may have been, you know, 15 or 20 years ago, pre-internet. Mm. And for me, my predominant platform has become LinkedIn.
Yes. And
I love it because I even notice with myself, I will actually read a post. Whereas on Instagram, it's almost feeding this instant gratification mindset and, you know, the doom scroll. Somebody actually gave me a stat the other day. Unfortunately, I don't remember it. But how many, I don't know, it was like trillions of kilometers of scrolling, you know, that people do, you know, hundreds of kilometers, probably a single individual, you know, as you doom scroll on Instagram. And so that is a split second of attention you're trying to grab, which is actually really expensive. I remember when I used to book a studio and book a photographer and an art director and sometimes a model, and we would spend the whole day, and the amount of money we'd spend on food to curate a beautiful, you know, like the amount of photographs I'd get out of that shoot day versus how much time that photograph would get attention for on Instagram or Facebook didn't feel like there was the right exchange.
Yeah.
Whereas LinkedIn has been, and what I love about LinkedIn, and I've seen it in, you know, like Richard Branson, how many followers he has versus Virgin.
Yes.
And there are many situations like this. I mean, I think I'm up to 16,000, but Oryx might only be a couple of thousand.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows that we, you know, we've sort of, in a way, we're coming full circle, that we want to know, this person, my salt comes from this person and these are her values. Or if you go to a farmer's market, Jane makes my cheese. Wow, and they get it from this beautiful farm. The cows are happy cows. So just so that there's, you know, in a world where there's so much disconnection, seemingly connection, you know, on the internet and digital, but the one-to-one connection is gone. So it's really fascinating going places and doing, you know, going to networking events, and people love knowing the history, the story, and the details around Oryx. I think it just gives it that much more meaning in a world where sometimes I think we've lost a lot of meaning.
You've mentioned a lot of things there that I want to get into. One of the things that we keep finding, of course, is that the founder, the CEO, the person behind the business is more trusted a lot of the time, which adds to the trust of the brand, right? So I think there you've kind of absolutely hit something that we've kind of been seeing over and over again in strategy and marketing. I've also noticed something else to your point, that your primary platform is LinkedIn. There are very few, call it consumer brands, that are on LinkedIn, speaking to people, speaking to the consumer. I've seen there's a cereal brand, for instance, that I follow. There's a canned water brand that I follow. I can count the brands that I follow, which are consumer facing brands that are on LinkedIn, which is different if I was on Instagram or Facebook, where I'd see a lot more of them. How have you seen that strategy, I suppose, of you being more visible on LinkedIn than, say, in Instagram, which is a consumer-led platform? How have you seen that contributing to the growth of the brand?
Massively. It's really been exciting, especially the last couple of years. I mean, it feels like there's this growing sort of movement of people. Maybe it's just reaching more people, and it is, because the one post you might have seen with "Don't throw away our grinders," I think currently has about 340,000 impressions, which is pretty phenomenal. It did well organically on Facebook and Instagram as well. So somehow it really resonated with people, which was really beautiful. But again, I think people want to know more behind. Yes. And so even though I post around Oryx, there's a lot more of my journey and me personally on LinkedIn. And I think that's what brings in this beautiful personal connection with people, because, you know, either you're an entrepreneur or you're a business owner, and obviously the algorithm would, you know, change a little bit. But entrepreneurs want to learn from other entrepreneurs. And I've really had some quite phenomenal, very heartwarming messages that I get, you know, on DMs from people who have been following me. And let's say they've started their own brand, and just hearing some of the struggles that I've been through, and just the general, how work and how our lives are impacted by being consumed by our brands and consumed by work.
Yeah.
And so, you know, sometimes the lessons on LinkedIn are almost reminders to myself, you know, taking time out and what have you. And they just, you know, they're seeds of inspiration, they're reminders. And I've actually built Oryx from that. Pre the internet, there was an entrepreneur organization, I think it was called The Real Entrepreneur. And I signed up to that, and I would get two or three different CDs per month on different aspects, finance and marketing and so on. And I'd play those in my car while I was driving. I mean, now we just have, you know, I mean, the offering that we have on YouTube and LinkedIn know, everywhere. So being inspired has been a huge part of my journey. It just, it feeds my energy and it feeds my enthusiasm when I hear other people's success stories. Okay, well, if they did it, I can do it too. And you kind of, and then you take the next couple of steps forward. And often they're just stepping stones for even some meetings that might seem very exciting. And they don't result in anything. Just that moment of, you know, yay, that little moment of exciting kind of boosts you forward.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show.
So just to go back to that full circle, almost to that Greenside restaurant experience that you had, the first time that I encountered Oryx was on a restaurant, was at a restaurant, on a restaurant table, not in store. And I know that that was an intentional part of your strategy as well, to go, let's be in front of people where they are having food, and very likely to then take, you know, us wants to take the salt home with them from a store perspective. How has that kind of strategy, in your view, shaped how you've built customer loyalty and how you've built a customer base? This idea that I can take a salt from my favorite restaurant home with me the next time I kind of buy groceries. The next time I buy groceries in a store.
Kind of home with them, which makes our lives really difficult, because then the restaurant doesn't want to buy. So yes, to your point, I think from the very beginning, I focused on food service, restaurant, hospitality, and retail, knowing that I heard a statistic. I haven't studied marketing. In fact, I haven't studied anything. I've just been studying through life and the experience and learning lessons along the way. But one statistic I heard is that in marketing, people need to see something 7 to 12 times in order for there to be a sense of familiarity. And only then, when they feel sort of comfortable and safe, will they reach out and buy the product. So, you know, my strategy was, you know, people go to two or three or four different restaurants and they see the same grinder. Many people might not even notice the grinder for quite a few visits. But eventually, you know, and even subconsciously, it's going to sink in. And then when they happen to be needing salt, they might be in a, you know, in a more open space, because I think generally when people go into a supermarket, they go with a shopping list.
Yes.
And they have salt, and they go to the aisle and they scan the aisle and the products for the logo and the brand that is familiar to them because it's in their kitchen. However, if they start seeing the Oryx brand many times and they get to the shelf and they scan and they spot Oryx, there could be this moment of openness, and there might be some, you know, possibly some nostalgia. That meal that they had at that particular restaurant where they had so much fun, or there was, you know, something beautiful shared, and they happened to notice the grinder, and then they might pick up, you know, Oryx off the shelf.
Yeah.
So it has, and for the first many years, I would say, I mean, we've been going 15 years now. For the first 10, maybe 9, we did very little. There was social media, but it was not to the degree that we're doing now. And I only launched LinkedIn when we launched on shelf in the USA, which was 4 years ago. So I've only been using the LinkedIn platform for 4 years. So, you know, as I say, the product is in a unique position that it can be on a restaurant table.
Yes.
But I think there are many products where there is an additional market that it can go into, not just the market that one seems for it to be the most normal or the most common sense or the most natural.
Yeah.
And then to that point, it's also the sector in which you're offering it. So for 11 years, I focused on the foodies, did Good Food and Wine Show. The Stellenbosch Slow Food Market was very valuable, just showing up there every single week. And it wasn't me, it was a dear friend of mine, Sarah, who I think showed up for 4 years in a row every Saturday.
Sure.
And just again, that, you know, that compounded visibility.
Mm.
But then I came across this other community, which is biohacking or longevity and health optimization and wellness. And I went to a wellness conference and showcased Oryx there. And 3 months before, I had been at a food conference in New York. And the difference in the response from the consumers that were at these two different places was worlds apart. At the foodie conference, I felt like I was trying to convince people that this was the healthy alternative. And at the wellness conference, everyone already knew that salt was good. It was essential, not only good for you, absolutely essential for optimal health. And they'd done their research. And for them, the quality of the product that they're wanting to purchase and consume for their health is, you know, is top priority.
Mm.
And so the wellness conference, I had 165 exciting conversations
right.
in 3 days. Because everyone understood the product, and I wasn't converting them or convincing them.
Mm-hmm.
I was just offering them a very good quality, mineral-rich, clean alternative to what else is on offer. And it was, I made 165 sales.
There's something in there that I want to unpack a bit, because this is something that most brands, most people, myself, somebody who's building a community, struggle with. And it's this idea of building a platform, a product, a brand, a community with a specific audience in mind, and not listening to the audience that kind of comes to you and being willing to change to that audience. So you've mentioned something else earlier, which to me links back to this, which is that before deciding what you should put on your bottles, you kind of asked the customer, you asked people, you had a survey that you put out. So I think to me, both of these talk to listening and kind of turning and going with where the audience kind of goes. How did that listening to your community, listening to your customer, change how you went out to the market over the past couple of years that, you know, that you've been there? I mean, you mentioned earlier that you had been talking about the grinder for over a decade but now it looks like people are only now starting to listen. And that's one of the things that becomes I suppose, increases in your messaging. The other part of your messaging is the health and the aspects that are not talked about. You don't think about salt and health in the same sort of space, especially with doctors telling us about high blood pressure, all of these things, like, you know, all the negatives, I suppose. I guess the question is, how do you change when the market changes and evolve with the market, when you've always had this business, this product, this brand in mind that serves these people and not those people, as it were?
So, I mean, I think that's the blessing of being a small company, you know, where the video that I saw was a gentleman by the name of Dave Asprey, and he's the father of biohacking. And he talked about the smallest biohack is put a grind of salt into your drinking water. And that pretty much changed the course of where I then focused my attention. So I guess it's being open and fluid to the changes.
Yeah.
Rather than having this absolute set mindset and going, well, this is the market that it's going to work for, as opposed to being always having an element of curiosity and openness to what am I not seeing? What am I not hearing? What is it that I don't know? I know that I don't know a lot, you know, and I guess that's, you know, and in my life generally, I'm pretty curious. I like, there's been a lot of adventure in my life. So that certainly has helped to suddenly go, hang on a moment, there's a whole sector of people that I hadn't even considered. And what's so interesting, actually, is in the very beginning, I targeted health shops. And I actually came with this health mindset, but it's so interesting. There are many people in most of the health shops I went into, they didn't want to be told that there was a product that was like a new product on the market that was healthier than what they had. They liked to be the ones that knew what was happening in the health space. It was very interesting.
Yeah, we tell and you, even you don't tell us kind of thing.
Exactly. And I think to this day, we're barely in any health shops. So then I had to pivot into the foodies, which of course it obviously was very obvious as well. And now suddenly it's swung back. So I guess it's also the nature of life, you know, COVID arrived. And that I really believe was a huge blessing to humanity and to individuals, because suddenly I don't want to get sick. So if I don't want to get sick, how do I stay healthy? And how do I take more control over my health? And with the internet as well, there's so many incredible people who are offering back to research and knowledge. And we can research ourselves, whereas, you know, 20, 25 years ago, we were putting all of our power and the, you know, putting the doctors on a pedestal and deeming them having the power and the knowledge. But now we're in this, you know, sort of free speech time of our lives, which is really incredible. And so it's really to explore more.
I get that. So many businesses, many brands talk about sustainability or this idea of sustainability, and yet very few almost structure their success around it. So how do you, as a leader, as founder and CEO, balance this idea of, I suppose, growth for the business, growth of the brand, while you're asking your customers to buy less, not more, which is also one of those philosophies that you really are building?
I would say, you know, this isn't something that I'm doing for a few weeks or a few years. This is my life. And for me, it's a long game. So that ensuring that sustainability is important and is something that we keep top of mind gives me, it makes me happy. Lets me sleep well at night. Again, you know, speaks to integrity. Are we going to create something that, gives us profit in the short term, but has detrimental impact in the long term? That wouldn't give me the the fuel and the power and the passion to be able to speak and share my brand in the way that I do, because they would be, I really do have a clean conscience, whereas I think brands had cut corner. You can't really go out there and rah, rah, rah,
yes,
because there's a chink in your message, or there's a glitch in your product formulation because you have cut corners. So I think it just really speaks to the passion in which one can and how you can advocate for your own product. And that, I think, just really gives it more value again. People, when they can see that it isn't just about profit, I think that really does build long-term loyalty and an ambassadorship. It feels, on LinkedIn, I've now got these supporters and ambassadors who, when they go to a restaurant and they can clearly see it doesn't have sea salt in, they're actually going to speak up for the brand. And that's because of some of the values that we've instilled into the brand, and which is pretty amazing. In fact, I heard some years ago that I think in the 50s, there was a women's march that happened at Central Park. And I think there were 50,000 women who descended on Central Park, and there wasn't the internet. So that was word of mouth.
Yeah.
And it was a seed for me that I want to use the power of word of mouth as a very strong and the foundation for our marketing, rather than, in fact, I actually heard another, I overheard a conversation in a restaurant where a woman was sharing that her daughter had been retrenched because the company had been so successful, but they had relied on the Google algorithms.
Yeah.
And then the algorithms changed, and now her daughter was being retrenched. And in fact, I cut all of my meta spend after that, because I want you to rather build something that has deep roots and
yes,
is very strong, rather than on a platform that I have no control over that can change in an instant.
So that's interesting. And I think there's something else. I think this idea of control reminds me of something else that you've kind of shared that I wanted to ask about. It's also interesting that you're talking about cutting your meta spend, whereas I suppose this, balancing the awareness with the sales is one of those things that a lot of brands are kind of doing quite a lot, or at least focusing on. This idea of control, there's something that you've been talking about in recent times where restaurants are refilling Oryx bottles with salt that is clearly not Oryx. What's your view on how you control experience where you are not physically there to kind of control it, to say this is our salt versus something else? And do you feel that this tarnishes a brand, or does this add to awareness or some sort of brand awareness? How do you feel about that the fact that people trust your bottle so much that they refill other salt in it, and also the fact that you can't control the experience because you aren't there?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. It's getting quite a bit more attention, in our team now. I want people to have the full Oryx experience, because the salt is different. It tastes different. It has a different source. It is absolutely clean and unpolluted and uncontaminated. So it really doesn't feel right for people to put it on their food if it isn't Oryx, but seemingly it's supposed to be. So in fact, the new research, well, it's not so new, but what we're going to share with our restaurants is that it is potentially a health risk to put sea salt into our bottles, because Oryx desert salt can be consumed with people who've got hyperthyroidism and are allergic to iodine. And so it's actually very irresponsible. And if we can come from that angle, then maybe they will take Oryx a little bit more seriously. And we've thought about doing a subscription model for when they buy grinders, then we send them a bucket every 3 months. But there's also a logistical component about that too. So we're busy exploring that. I mean, in some ways, you know, don't they say in marketing, you know, bad publicity is, you know, good publicity, which is a bit sad, but I guess awareness is awareness. So maybe, you know, even the fact that this has happened, it's given me an opportunity to talk about Oryx and the differences. So again, I've actually, it's given me a talking point, you know, so it's actually given me another whole angle and a story to talk about, which is marketing. So, you know, if I look at it from that angle, then it's been positive, you know, using a negative, turning a negative into a positive.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier that, of course, you've expanded to international markets. And as you've expanded to international markets, how have you managed to keep the brand and story authentic, human, and still as values-led as it was when you launched in South Africa? And as you grow in South Africa, how do you ensure that that story remains true to somebody buying Oryx salts in New York versus somebody buying it here who follows you on LinkedIn?
So actually nothing changes. I would say it's the same values-driven brand. In fact, it's actually in a way ramped up the goodness that we can do, because there's a beautiful project called Project Biome that we donate to. And not only do we donate, but we also, it's not on this one. There's supposed to be a QR code on our products. And the QR code creates awareness about this very beautiful agroecology regenerative project that is happening in South Africa. And so people can donate directly into that organizational project to make a difference on the ground. So it's given me more opportunity to make a difference, which is really beautiful. And in America, I've tried to use podcasts as my sort of number one form of marketing, because again, it's reaching out to communities that I don't otherwise have a connection with. And when we launched in September of 2021 in the US, I knew personally two people, my best friend and one other friend. And and now I've really got an incredible community of colleagues, of friends, of a community that I've managed to build, both in person at the wellness biohacking conferences and online. And so that's obviously been an incredible part of growing the brand in the US. So I wouldn't want to change anything, because then it would just, again, sometimes the cash flow is tight and maybe the payments might get delayed a little to the projects. But, you know, as I say to my accountant, I can't talk about giving back if we're not actually doing it. And then I feel out of integrity then there's incongruence within myself. So it's really important that my story remains my story and the values of the brand remain solid and unwavering. Doesn't matter how far and wide we reach.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show.
Samantha, thanks so much for all the insights and all the amazing work that you're doing out there. We usually have a question that our guest leaves for our next guest. So think of it as our previous guest passing the mic to you. And one of our previous guests was Silebogo Molefe, an entrepreneur and founder of a platform and community called Share the Codes. And the question he left for you was, seeing the changing world order as it's currently taking place, in his view, where the next civilization seems to be taking over, and the context that he shared was, it's more becoming the East that's kind of taking over than it used to be, that the West was kind of leading markets, leading, the spaces that to interact and engage with, driving culture and all the rest of it, where it's more and more becoming the Chinese or China kind of leading that rather than the US, as it were, right? So that's the kind of context that he used. So then his question is, what hope do you think that promises the world, and how should we as underdeveloped economies take advantage of that change?
Okay, so I'm going to answer the question, and then I'm going to ask you if I can have 2 more minutes to explain to your beautiful audience why RHCS salt is different. So what I felt when you were asking the question, because we are in significant times of change, is there's a movement that's happening in South Africa that is feeling very powerful. And in fact, one of the founders of this project called Project Biome is a gentleman, Dr. Zach Bush, and he's now a humanitarian. And he came to South Africa and completely fell in love with it. And he believes that South Africa, and I've heard this many times, not just from him, that South Africa is the heart chakra of the world. And that the changes in the world are going to come out of South Africa. And South Africa, the line, longitudinal line, matches up and meets up with the pyramids in Giza. And almost why China and America are on opposite poles, because they came not from the heart, but from the head and from power. And there is an Africa Rise movement that is bubbling very strongly, and lots of different movements within. There are these new networks like the LACA network in South Africa, where South Africans are connecting with each other all over the world and supporting one another. And there's a spirit in South Africa and a geest that I believe doesn't exist elsewhere. There's something real and raw and tribal and rooted in this beautiful place. And I feel it when I go to the USA, when I'm on trade shows. It feels like I'm carrying a torch and a light for South Africa and for Africa. And people love it. They connect with it. It's something that's different. And so, you know, if each one of us is doing what we can, one for ourselves, taking care of ourselves, taking care of our communities, ensuring that whatever we're doing is the absolute best, making sure that we're maintaining those communities, we're not getting lost in that, in the digital AI, what's happening, because that's actually just going to make us even more stressed. Yeah. I mean, the fact even now, you know, we're sitting on a screen, you're 1500 kilometers away, and here we are having a conversation. I'm not sure if the mind can actually grasp how that can be a reality. So yeah. I think there's a lot more stress that's going to come, and we really need to take care of our nervous systems, and we live in this most beautiful place, and so we just really need to stay connected to ourselves, connected to the earth, and connected to each other. And I believe there's some very special things happening from South Africa. Let's watch this space.
That's amazing. Yeah, so I think we've come to sort of the end of our conversation, and I'd now like you to leave a question as well for our next guest. And this is you passing the mic to our next guest, and you can leave a question around their thoughts on creativity, marketing, business, or their creative process, maybe even life as well. What would your question be to the next guest?
So in whatever you do, what is the real purpose and your why in what you do, and how can it make a difference, both for yourself individually, for the team that you work with? How can we instill and bring in taking care of one another, bringing more kindness into our work, kindness into our product, so that we're leaving a beautiful legacy, and we're not leaving something behind that doesn't support the generations in the future.
Amazing, amazing question. And yeah, you said you wanted to leave something for 2 minutes around RHCS salts.
Thank you. So for all of you who haven't tried RHCS salt yet, it comes from the most beautiful salt pan, which is 250 kilometers north of Upington in the Kalahari Desert. And they discovered underground a 55 million ton underground aquifer. The aquifer is renewed and sustained by subterranean rivers that flow through ancient 280 million year old rock strata. And when we draw up the the salt water, the brine, onto the salt pan. One, it has not been touched by human hands. And two, it's oversaturated. And so in summer at 45, 50 degrees, it crystallizes into these beautiful, pure white crystals from one full moon to another, under the stars, the desert wind, and the hot African sun, and we bottle it. So it's this mineral-rich, dense, clean. It's literally got the energy and the frequency of the beautiful elements in the Kalahari, and we add nothing and we take nothing away. And then the grinder we mentioned, but it can be refilled 20 times and more. I had a chef reach out the other day. She said she was throwing her grinders away after 7 or 8 years. So imagine how much that has saved her from replacing. How many grinders have not ended up in landfill? And yeah, the sad truth is that we haven't taken care of the oceans, and 95% of sea salt has been tested with microplastics. So Oryx Desert Salt is a very healthy offering, an alternative for your health. And don't be scared to eat salt. If you are craving salty, firstly, grind some Oryx into your drinking water and hydrate first, and then go and snack on something. And if you want salt, the taste buds are talking to us. They're very intelligent. Just be aware of how much processed foods you're eating, because those will all have table salt in. And when you're cooking at home, rather choose the healthy, rich, chemical-free option for your and it tastes different. If you taste Oryx salt and then you taste another salt, it actually tastes different. So, yeah, enjoy. And I hope to get your feedback. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks so much for making the time. It was a great conversation.
Such a pleasure. Lovely to chat.
Thank you for listening to The Lead Creative. Did you get one insight that's worth sharing from this episode? Please share it with your network or your friends. Pop me some of your ideas and innovative finds on Twitter. On @Mongezi. This podcast is available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also find me on mongezi.com.